Don't be provoked. Venezuela.
Alguien en
what is the IPC, what we need to do
and why, what role are they bringing to our economy, especially in this very hard time. When you look at our economic situation, our debt levels are quite high. How is ICT going to contribute to that? But above all, it's about transforming the lives of our people so that poverty levels can be alleviated and our people enjoy freedom and food, the total emancipation of our people in all industries. When we look at them socially and also economically, they should look happy in our lifetime. That's the slogan of people. And I think participants should be competing with that. I don't know whose lifetime, because when we say age, it's 80 from people. I don't know whose lifetime. But we all say in our lifetime. Thank you so much. May I welcome both the members and also our visitors or our partners in social development. We are going to be giving the chairperson of ICC and CEO to lead us to the presentation. But before we do so, I can see that there's a new face that might not know who is here. So for the benefit of Mount Nathan, let me introduce members to me so that you can know who is here. I'll start with the gentleman at the end.
My name is Mohammed Balde from the...
I'll introduce my team first.
Okay.
Yes. We have Honorable Mata from the Economic Freedom Fighters. He's wearing a black beret today, not a red beret. Well. And the next speaker is the Honorable Atkinson. He's the member of the Democratic Alliance. Next to him is Dr. Kado, also representing the Democratic Alliance. And the rest of the team is from the African National Congress, starting with Mr. Tliani, Mem Ranto, Mem Matimbi, Mem Obaustel is also our group of the committee. And then we have Ubabu Pikinini. Those are members. And then we have the secretary of the committee, Ubabu Mbele. And then just on my right, immediate right, and we have Ndebe Kani, who is our teacher. And then we have the committee assistant for Tabiso, the teacher. And then we have my PA, Felicia Williams. And then you know the other team, you know Tulu. I'm not going to introduce the department because it's very important. But Tulu is also one of our, because we own a smaller department, I think. Yes. That's the team. Now I'm Marshall Coleman, the chair of the committee. Mr. Malaysia, who is not here today, but is also part of the team. So that's it. That's the team from the committee, the popular committee. Mr. Bowder is also from the department. They are all on your side. I'm sort of on your side. You are their agent, so they must, you are on their side. Thank you so much. May I then hand over to Peter Paul to give us the apology.
Thank you, Che. I'm just going to register with two apologies. The one is from the Honourable Steve, who is unable to be at this meeting because he's engaged with family responsibilities. And the other chair is from Mr. Ambassador, member of Parliament, who is currently on site.
Thank you, Mr.
Tua.
Mr.
Malaysia,
and I don't want any comments from members. As a chair, I am accepting the apologies that they are. Melancho. Thank you. Thank you. Today members are quite naughty. I think. Okay. May I, without any further waste of time, hand over to you,
Honorable Chair, honorable members, thank you so much for the opportunity to be here in front of you again to present our annual performance plan, which has been submitted to yourself already. And so we have distributed the slides that we'll be using to go through the plan this morning. So we appreciate any opportunity of continuing to yourself, especially when you come to new venues and you see more of this beautiful parliamentary crescent. So when we drafted and submitted the corporate plan, we knew that South Africa was facing great difficulty on the economic front, but we were optimistic too, and I hope that comes through in our corporate plan. Events have overtaken us, so the risks that we highlighted, the most prominent of which is the potential, then potential downgrade of our of the sovereign credit rating, have now materialized. And those changes in case would have an impact on our funding, sources of funding, cost of funding, and therefore how we roll out our plan. However, Chair, I'm encouraged by the enthusiasm that management and staff continue to have. I'm encouraged by the fact that our people recognize that we are a developmental finance institution, and therefore precisely when things become more difficult, we should then be out in the market, in the economy, disbursing and assisting partners to get through the difficulty. That, however, Chair, must be done balancing our own financial sustainability. It is important that we don't, in trying to alleviate one problem, create a new problem of an institution that is weak because we are not watching our financial matrices. Chair, I hope you will pick up our optimism in the presentation of our plan. And I hope that as much as we will talk through the rest as well, we will convince you that they don't hamper our delivery on the Monday. Sure, the organization has, for the past while, certainly since I've been there from 2012, stepped up its activity, its dispatching. It's not enough, Chair, we accept. And the CEO says to the board, and says to the staff, we need to be doing more with what we have. So we accept that we need to be doing more. But Chair, I would like to hopefully get your acknowledgement that we have been dispersing more and more. We've been increasing our targets in terms of activity in the economy. Even when we say, Chair, I hope we will convince you that it is for reasons that were not necessarily within our control, and that we are taking initiatives to do better going forward. Chair, I have today, in a part of our delegation, which as the Chair has already indicated, which has our Board Audit Committee, and we welcome to have her here. She is the one that looks at those impairment numbers and wants to make sure that they are honest numbers. It's not because we were being reckless in our lending. It's because we were performing our duties and things have just turned against us. She looks at whether we are checking prudent in managing our finances. And as we expect our debt to equity ratio to increase, the Board Audit Committee under the chairmanship of Ms. Mumasana ensures that we do that in a responsible and prudent manner, not putting the organization at risk. Chair, we have the Chief Financial Officer who has been here a few times before, Ms. Nomkhululeko Dlamini. She's making sure that I say the correct surname, because I think the last time she was here, or the first time she was here, she was still Ms. Benetti. I have, Chair, the man that you probably have interacted with the most, Mr. Carlos Ocana, who leads the organization at the executive level. We have Mr. David Jarvis, representative in charge of corporate strategy. That's the man that, together with Mr. Bauder in the department, interrogates our numbers to see whether we are indeed showing incremental improvements as we plan. So we have next to him Ms. Pio Marumo, who is in the CEO's office, making sure that we coordinate our activities appropriately. And from our regional office, we have the Enrico Free here to represent the head of the Western Cape Regional Office. Chair, of course, we appreciate the support of the department. Hopefully it's not partial chair, hopefully it is complete, because we did sign on the corporate plan that we presented to yourself. Chair, most of the people that are in the team are going to have an opportunity to say a word or two to the honorable members. So I think let me not waste time and rather hand over to the CEO, who will be the highlight of the presentation. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair of the IPC. Sure, which chair I am. Otherwise, Mr. Mbata will say I'm claiming. So, thanks to the chair of the IBC for that comprehensive introduction and for introducing the team. Chair of the portfolio committee, it is indeed, and the honorable members, it is indeed always a pleasure that you are afforded this opportunity to engage with yourself. We do this twice a year at least, when we present the plan and also when we present the performance, which hopefully we'll do towards the end of the financial year of the performance. I think the chair of the IDC has put in the context when we presented this plan, which plan was given to the members sometime in February. So, Chair, with your permission, we have prepared a presentation which is highlighting some aspects of the corporate plan as that was presented. And as customary chair, we will take questions from both the Chair, what we do is the chair of the audit of the IDC has indicated each is voted the members of the given opportunity. With your permission, I will make a few comments. David Jarvis will take us through the corporate plan, some aspects of the corporate plan, and the chief financial officer will also talk through the financial aspects, and then supported by the chair of the audit committee. And then Mr. Commission will take the questions after. Chair, I don't want to assume. I see we have been given until 11:20. Is that for the presentation, Chair? And then we'll take questions after. That's it. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Chair, let me highlight and see when we get to it. It's a small typo which we don't want to confuse the members. The corporate plan is substantially correct. There's a slide, when David comes to you and highlights slide 10, and we set over 5 years the development outcomes. In there, there's a combination. There's a developmental part which is youth and women, which is 5 years, the last of it is in line with what we presented before. But the numbers, all the numbers, talk to what we have. So that is on slide 10.
Yes.
You see, we say over 5 years. That's much too much. The development of
yes.
The other one is fine. There's two sets of numbers. That's the providing funding, the 3.1 to black women, and the 4 billion to youth. So those are 5 year figures. So it comes up on the base and it comes up on the target. The rest of the other numbers. And the women empowered, so there's funding, women empowered, those are 5 year figures. Because we've looked at it for 5 years, but you'll see when David talks about the actual corporate plan, which is the slide, that's for 3 years. But the rest of the other numbers are in these. But those numbers also talk to the numbers. The one, the heading in the corporate plan is correct. We've also added, I think it's about 4 slides, which we will not go through. Those are just for additional, Chair, that talks to a summary of the overview of the IDC in 1 slide, our mission, our long-term targets, and so on. Those are the additional events are coming. Chair, what we've seen really at the IDC is over time we have been able to be responsive. That's on slide 3. So we've seen how over time we have to evolve. Where as the IDC we really tried to respond not only to the shareholder but to the environment in which we find ourselves. Which is why we always constantly ensure that we align ourselves with government priorities and directions, and particularly with the issue of ensuring that we include innovation and government. So when we look at our strategy, which really is underpinned by increasing industrial development, by ensuring that we are sustainable in the long term. Sustainable through financial side, but also on the human and social part. So this is what really underpins us. By increasing industrial and development impact, we've done that through being proactive. We recall, Chair, in 2015, we embarked on a new strategy called for when we look at the value chain, David will touch a little bit just to remind the committee members of what we're doing and where we are. But there we're looking at being more aggressive, looking at strengthening our developmental objectives. There we're talking about social integration, we're talking about ensuring that jobs are created, we're talking about the transformation that happens. But all of this, increasing our industrial development, we're doing this while ensuring that we are aligned to the key government development objectives, the policies, through the National Development Plan, the Learning Path, the National Policy Action Plan, and the National Policy Action Plan, and all the other things, so to ensure that we are indeed aligned. We do this actually by providing industrial funding. That is how we unlock this, that's how we promote this, so we provide finance into those sectors and through our interventions to ensure that the objectives that we set hopefully they're being achieved. But also the role we play on the small and medium sized enterprises, we do that through our subsidiaries. We have a subsidiary called Small Enterprise Finance, IFA, which supports our wholly owned subsidiary. So that plays a role as far as assisting SMEs. The chair of the IDC has painted a picture, a picture of the economic environment that we find. It's been a tough year. You will see when we present the results towards the latter part of this year that it is indeed a tough year. But even when we presented the results last year, we did indicate to the committee that it's been a tough year. But having said that, we've said as the IDC, as the development finance institution, we need to continue to play that counter-cyclical role, which is why we've embraced the role that we've been given. Tough as it is, without being reckless, the chair of the IDC has made that point. But we need to step up, we need to play our role, we need to ensure that our activities do indeed contribute. Stimulation of the economy as well. And naturally, as we plan, we also look into the medium and long term. Globally, we also do have, I would like to believe, a very strong economic unit that is in touch with what's happening, that plays a key role, particularly in the planning of our giving us an insight of what the globe will be looking like in terms of the outlook, the global outlook, in terms of where the growth areas are for the global outlook, but for Africa and the rest of the Africa, and then South Africa as well. And from that interaction, it's clear that there will be some growth, but as expect together with our special information unit says, that should be driven largely by emerging markets, dominant in India. So we see some growth. And when you look at that, we see some of those developed markets will not be growing to the extent that we hope they do. As the committee members, we know that South Africa trade, particularly on manufactured goods, largely with the developed economies, largely in Europe and the US. And we know with the withdrawal, the Brexit, the UK's withdrawal, there is an element of uncertainty. Even though ourselves, South Africa, as a trading partner, we're not anticipating a major shift, I think that was confirmed by the Minister of Trade and Industry. But that uncertainty impacts on people's perception of the economy as well. So that's a space that we'll be watching. But also the pronouncement that we see that is coming from the US, where it's more like inward looking, so that also has an impact. There hasn't been a case from our side, there hasn't been any clear direction in terms of what the US policy is regarding Africa, so that's something that we always keep in our mind. So with that outlook, and then superimposed it to South Africa, we are anticipating if in the year that we are planning, there will be indeed modest growth. We are seeing that there will be real growth, but we're thinking that it will be more. plan is to try and incorporate the new corporate form. Now, as the chair of the ISP, subsequent to the plan, there has been a further development. So now we have seen something like 7 days. We have seen a downgrade to the first round of them, something set round, because not all rating agencies have pronounced on that yet. So we saw S&P Standard & Poor's and Fitch. Let me hasten to say, as IDC chair of the portfolio committee, we are rated by two rating agencies, Moody's and Fitch. So Fitch on the domestic side and Moody's on the international. So as Moody's has said, they will they have given themselves between 30 and 90 days. My indication is that in the next week or so they will be coming to South Africa, so we will get a sense of where they will be. So in the event Moody's was to downgrade sovereign, so we will be affected as well. So presently, even though Standard & Poor has downgraded, I still have not downgraded. Because Fitch, even though they have downgraded sovereign, but they have not downgraded because they still were out of the sovereign. So the effect, but having said that, because we've seen over time there's been consistent statements made by the rating agencies, all three of them. They are concerned about growth, and seeing areas showing that growth is sustainable. So we started as an organization to prepare ourselves to say, in the event we were to develop, what would it mean for the ICO? Nothing to try to. So that slide 7 is trying to highlight now what would be the positives. One thing that is very common, which we want to see, is that the cost of doing business will change. So that's because we do, as the CFO will highlight in the slide she has, in terms of our borrowing, we do go out and we borrow both locally and internationally. And since she came in, she's been working very hard to engage with a number of those that we borrow from, ensure that we negotiate in the event which we can that even that cost that we see is really reduced. But having said that, there are some positives that we highlight, at least from our perspective, because we see for those who are reliant on exports when the rand is weaker, they will be able to take advantage of that. But we know the economy also has those that import, so the export focus. The other area which we see ourselves as IDC now, where we see some of the companies, particularly those that rely on national imports, we think they will be able to struggle, and that's where our role will have to come in to ensure that we have to be able to. So really we factor the impact of the downgrade in the event that actually happens, and we think we are getting to be able to respond to that. And that we've just factored it in our. So at this stage, David, let me give you the opportunity just to take the committee through the first couple of slides on the portfolio together with what we've also done. David will also give the committee some of the projects that when we came here presented last time, so where we are just for the committee itself, of the, and then after that, then the chief financial officer must be there.
CEO, thank you, Chair. As you have seen in our corporate plan, there's some continuity and also some change in terms of the fact that we still are implementing Project Evolve. Which we started implementing from April 2015. But at the same time, we recognise that we need to respond to the current operating environment. And when we look at the CEO's outline, the economy is flatter than what we expected it to be when we had previous corporate plans, and flatter than what we expected it to be when Project Evolve was introduced. So this requires us to be more proactive, and in fact, when I get to the Project Evolve slide, I'll say how we think it's the right strategy for the current time. We also need to look at our financial sustainability. The chairperson of IDC mentioned that in her introduction. And we'll look at, there's a number of initiatives which we've implemented now that our CFO will go through. So financial sustainability in the current environment, we understand that the economy is under pressure. We need to respond, we need to be counter-cyclical as IDC, but at the same time we need to ensure that we retain financial sustainability. It's actually been an opportunity for us to look closer at our operations, our systems, to actually say how can we improve ourselves, how can we be more efficient and more effective. And those we have already implemented a number of interventions. This committee has commented on our subsidiaries before. We have three large subsidiaries in particular, Fosco, Score, and Tika, which in the past have made losses, which the committee did comment on. And we also, so we have focused on our subsidiary management. Even last year, we introduced, you know, a deep dive at the board level, and a number of other initiatives also which the CFO will also touch on. So subsidiaries management, we've raised the profile of that because obviously we think it's an important area that we need to engage on. These subsidiaries are important to us because of the impact they have, development impact. They are part of our value chains, and CIFA is obviously an extension of our development finance activities that reaches out to small enterprises. Another area of importance is our organizational culture and capabilities. I've touched on systems and processes, which we are looking to improve across the board, and we have made some gains in that space. So, for example, one of the areas where we changed our systems and processes has led to us cutting down the time that we disperse funds from approval by 50% in the last year. So we have been looking at improving systems and processes, but the culture of the organization is also an issue. Chair of the committee touched on it in the beginning around some of the frustrations which our clients might feel when they engage with the IDC. We recognize that, you know, we need to improve our culture. It's part of Project Evolve. How can we be more solutions driven, more proactive, more engaging, more client focused? So there's a number of initiatives around that, becoming more client centric, not only improving systems and processes, but also focusing on our staff, building their capacity to engage, and also working on the corporate culture to make it more of a high performance culture. Governance and regulatory matters is also another area where we continually focusing on. It isn't just because it's the flavor of the month. IDC has very strong governance structures, and we have identified a number of initiatives where we've looked at our board functioning, our conflict of interest, etc., where we are continuing to implement improvements. In terms of our corporate plan in a nutshell, I've already covered a number of these areas. Maybe just to point out as well, and I think the CEO also mentioned that in the period ahead, we are expecting that we will have to support companies in distress more. And obviously that means that when you support companies in distress, you also have to make sure that you have the right risk management in place, that you also make sure that these companies you aren't just supporting, we won't put money into a business which is going to fail. It has to have a sustainable business case. There needs to be light at the end of the tunnel. But we recognize currently that the conditions are quite poor within the economy. So as a DFI, it's our function to make sure that we assist these companies through this difficult period. In terms of Project Evolve, its focus is not only on increasing our impact in industrialization, but also increasing our development impact. Members might remember from last year, we saw significant improvements in our support to women and youth entrepreneurs, as well as to black industrialists. So that we're integrating those development impact outcomes with our industrialization strategy. So over the 5 years, you'll see that we are, the chair of IDC did mention that we do have ambitious targets. we are looking to increase our disbursements to almost 100 billion at the baseline and to 123 billion at the target level. And we're expecting that over the 3 years, this will create 84 to 104,000 jobs. If you'll also notice that we've increased our impact on the for women and youth and also black industrialists. With black industrialists at the target level, we're hoping to do 23 billion over the 3 year period. All of this, we have to maintain our debt to equity ratio. The CFO will probably touch on this, but you will see that at the target scenario level, we go up to 59% debt to equity ratio. So we're managing that during this time period so that it doesn't get out of hand, because obviously that's something which the ratings agents will look at. At the same time, our impairments ratio, we're managing that even at the target level to below the 20%. So we are seeing that it will go up, and a lot of that has to do with the funding to distressed clients. But we will be actively managing our impairments ratio so that it doesn't exceed our thresholds. We've given the detail of the short-term targets for the 3 years. Maybe just to highlight a few things of importance. It's a bit dull here, but maybe you can see on your page. The bulk of our targets are weighted towards our disbursements and job creation. So 40% of our targets are really around how much do we disperse, so how much do we put into the economy, because that's where we have the real impact. We don't measure approvals, because what we find is specifically in this economic period, there might be a delay in dispersing. So we think the real measure of that we should be looking at on our corporate target is when we put the money into the economy. And you'll see that that has a 20% weight. It's significant. And we're expecting to do 14.5 billion at the base and 18.5 at the target next year. Similarly, jobs has a 20% weighting, because our focus is really on jobs-rich industrialization. So we want to, and this is only direct jobs that we measure here on the short-term targets, so it's within the actual transactions, and we don't double count jobs. So when we put money into a business partner for a second time, we don't count the jobs again, and we're expecting that to go to 24,000 at the base and 29,500 jobs at the target. I'm sure you've gone through the targets. Maybe the other one which I should just mention is 15% of our targets you'll see are focused on our subsidiaries. We mentioned earlier that that's a key focus area for us, and I think it's reflected here jointly. Is 5% between the three subsidiaries which I mentioned, and including the implementation of a divestment strategy for SCORE, which is a new target. Chair, just to recap on what we're trying to do with Project Evolve. Project Evolve not only looked at improving our internal efficiencies and effectiveness in our structure, but really said, how do we shift from being a development finance institution that is a deal taker and shift to a deal maker? And so what are the transactions which give us the biggest impact on value chains? So our value chains cover most of manufacturing, and in those areas, we want to be more than just a financier. We want to make sure that the enabling environment within those value chains is conducive to growing those manufacturing sectors. So we get involved in the policy side of things, institutional side. We will develop projects from an early stage where we think they are strategic and they can make sure that the downstream industries will grow and jobs will be created. We also, at the same time, recognize that we need to cover all of manufacturing as well as other sectors like ICT services, and we cover those in what we call the high impact sectors, but there we'll have less of a proactive role. Something new which we introduced was the concept of new industries. When we did Project Evolve, it was before we were talking about Fourth Industrial Revolution, but really we were thinking about a similar kind of concept. we were saying we need to future-proof both the IDC and the economy. So we need to start looking at what are those industries which will be the growth industries of the future. And there's some detail in the corporate plan on that. So we also get involved actively there, working with research institutions, taking more of a venture capital role sometimes, to get an early stage to look at how we can grow these new industries so that they can be the future value chains of South Africa. And finally, we do industrial infrastructure. It's obviously an enabler for the other work, and really here we will partner with other DFIs within the space, try and crowd them in. Again, we only work with entrepreneurs, and we'll focus on industrial infrastructure across transport, ICT, telecommunications, energy, etc. See, what we've done in this corporate plan was to give some detail around the value chain, and in fact all of our sector approach. We wanted to give a sense of what we're trying to achieve within these value chains. Really, so that you can see it's not just about us saying there's a sector department, and if you have if you're manufacturing components for automobiles, you can come to this department. It's saying within that department, we have strategies to look at how we can improve increase the South African content for locally produced and assembled cars. And then we actively get involved engaging with government, engaging with international partners, etc., to make sure that we can grow these value chains. So you'll see that we've got a number of key focus areas. We've also highlighted a number of initiatives across the value chain, which are focused, which we believe will have strategic importance for these sectors. I won't go into any detail because obviously it's quite detailed, but obviously if there's any questions, you feel free to raise them. We also, like I said, have a focus on industrial infrastructure. We have strategies also for clothing and textiles and media and motion pictures. So these are sectors which, although they might not be as big as our value chain, they're strategic. There's strategic role. Clothing and textiles obviously is a massive labour multipliers. It employs a lot of people. Media and motion pictures, we believe, is an industry of the future. So we play a strategic role there in nurturing these sectors to facilitate their growth. This just touches on some of the approvals. Some of these are very early stage, but just to show that we some of our spread and also some of the, just to give a sense of the spread and of sectors and geographic reach of our activities. There's some interesting ones here. I'm going to mispronounce this, with Regenius, I think, which is a youth entrepreneur, a black youth entrepreneur who's manufactured a leakless valve for use in toilets. It's something that we got in very early stage in partnership with other funders, for example, the Joburg Metro, and now it's being rolled out into the provinces. And it's creating a lot of jobs in the installation processes, etc. We've also got some mining, some infrastructure, as well as manufacturing. When we came to the portfolio committee, we mentioned a couple of investments, just like we have now, and so we thought it would be interesting for the committee to just get an update on some of the progress. K9, which was a black woman industrialist in the Cape, the plant has almost been finished, it's almost fully completed, and they've already started delivering product to Woolworths, as was their plan, and now they're looking at expansion plans. In Clyden, which you might remember is the manufactures the isotopes which get used in identifying cancer. They finished the design. Again, this was an early stage project which we came in on, and they're still looking to complete it during 2018, and then they'll apply for MCC accreditation. Sunrise Energy, there's a picture there which doesn't do this justice. These are massive, what they call bullets, LPG bullets. It's an import terminal in Saldanha Bay. You can drive a bus into those into those bullets. They really are large, which are for storing LPG. So it's also focused on looking at our energy mix, improving the energy mix within the Western Cape. And it's 99.9% completed. It's hopefully in the next couple of weeks we'll have it'll be operational, and it's been completed within budget and on time. Cape Ray, I know the committee has expressed an interest in this project, so there have been some delays in terms of the testing, and once those delays have been once we've finalised the testing, then we will start the clinical trial. Chair of the committee mentioned the transformation and how it's important. Transformation, you know, our Act was amended post-democracy to include transformation as one of our objectives. And our approach to transformation has a number of legs. Firstly, on the far right, we need to ensure that we have internal transformation. So within the IDC, you know, how are we ensuring that we improve our own PEE rating according to the code? The other legs are focused on different client profiles. On the far left, we endeavour to increase the BEE rating of our clients. So we do have a requirement for our clients to be at a minimum level of 4 if we are to support them, or they have to have a plan on how they're going to get to level 4 on the new code. And so that's our first approach. The second one is to increase empowerment to both black women and youth and disabled communities and workers. And here we don't only support the financing of initiatives to support these entrepreneurs and groupings, but we also support them with business support. For example, we'll do training on how they can be effective members of boards, etc. We fund businesses, BEE businesses. When we look at our the rate that we charge on our finance, this is one of the areas we look at. Obviously, if you have a higher black shareholding, then we provide more concessionary finance. And then black industrials, which was our new focus from 2 years ago, where we provide concessionary finance of 150 basis points. We provide business support. And also what we'll do, which we don't do in our other transactions, is we'll also assist black industrials to acquire businesses where it makes strategic sense. So they're either going up or down the value chain, consolidating their business. So we'll support acquisitions for black industrials. We were granted facilitator status by the DTI during September 2016, and the facilitator status is limited to the following circumstances. It's really where we can support black industrialists to make sure that they achieve a certain level of with it's different across different sectors, so it might be 30% in tourism, it might be 50% if you're looking for procurement, etc. So we'll facilitate black industrialists to get over those marks, over those levels with the equity that we have within the business. We'll also use it to support distressed clients and early stage venture capital, where we have equity. So there's a process which has been set up with DTI and EDD also on a committee where, on a case-by-case basis, we will use the facilitator status for certain enterprises where they meet these criteria. And we really are looking, this is a way of, it's a facilitator status, so it's to facilitate exit to BEE parties and to ensure that we are supporting black economic empowerment. So it isn't just for all of the companies where we have an equity interest. You would see in the capital allocation, we have our 5-year, what we call capital allocation, broken down per sector, per our different focus areas. You'll notice that there is a shift towards more labour-intensive sectors. In particular, the capital allocation for agro-processing and agriculture is substantially higher than it was previously. We have highlighted previously that this is an area that we know we can do better in. Last year, obviously, it was affected. Last year and the year before, agri-processing and agriculture were negatively affected by the drought. We're coming out of the drought, and we see this as an area where we're going to have a particular focus in the coming period. We've also reduced our capital allocation to more capital-intensive projects, including to areas, including industrial infrastructure. So the focus is really on jobs-rich industrialization. Chair, I'm now going to hand over.
Thanks, as I indicated in our long-term sustainability, one such pillar is on the financial sustainability. And this is where now the Chief Financial Officer will take us to the post also, so that then what David has been talking about in terms of the interactions and the impact and the investment, how do those now are backed up by our funding position in doing this.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning to the committee. In terms of the financial sustainability, Chair, we have a process where we as the ICC have a self-funding model. So you would have indicated in the past that we don't necessarily use any support from our shareholder, and our funding model therefore has certain metrics that we actually measure and monitor over a longer period of time, and I'll talk a little bit to the numbers a bit later, but there are just very specific seven elements that we closely monitor, you know, to just make sure that we can continue to fund ourselves with a combination of collecting as our monies are due, so we would have funded either through equity or debt. And we just have a process and have been driving that over the past number of years, but we are intensifying it as we go forward to just ensure that we follow up to ensure that monies that should be collected are collected on time so that we can be able to use that money for new funding requirements from our clients. The other important element is that as we enter and support businesses at very early stages, we tend to take a higher risk of impairment. And therefore, we monitor very closely the possibility of impairment or non-performing of our investments, those that are already in our business. We've got a fully-fledged department that is called Post-Investment Monitoring Department that consistently follows and monitors all our investments so that we can identify any issues that may be in our existing clients. But also as we enter new investments, we also make sure that our due diligence processes are quite detailed so that we can pick up all the issues that may impact the impairment. Chair, in terms of the planning processes, it is even more important now with the current economic challenges because we have a five-year plan that we constantly update every 3 months and share that with our board. And we need to be able to stress test that any moment things change to basically be able to play scenarios. And in the recent past, we've tried to improve our scenario planning processes through just strengthening our models that we use so that as variables change, we can quickly input those numbers and see the impact on the metrics that we are monitoring. Also, the pricing is very critical, Chair, in our business because, as you would know, we take highly risky investments, so we need to ensure that we price them appropriately. But on the other end, we know that most of these entities have got a very significant developmental impact, and in our pricing models, we take that into account to balance the impact of them being high risk in the pricing process and give them discounts where necessary, where we can see that there is significant developmental impact. In our portfolio, in the recent past, we have seen the impact of the resource-based investments that we have, where when the export of our resources linked entities was impacted by prices, we saw that it impacted our balance sheet. And in the past visit to the committee, we indicated that we were driving a diversification strategy that will ensure that we are not exposed to the risk of high fluctuations because they significantly impact manage that as well over a period of time as we say in the journal. The other element, Chair, is that our funding has to be quite optimal. So we look at the relevance and appropriateness of the funding products that we give to our clients for their requirements. But if I look at it from also borrowing money from other entities, we try and make sure that we get concessional funding so that we can pass on the benefits to the customers. Also, our balance sheet is very strong, but we know that we've got quite a significant amount of work in terms of assisting the economy. So as we fund, we try and leverage as much as possible. For every rand that we give to the economy, we try to make sure that we get another rand or two from another entity that can crowd in with us to ensure that the impact is significant. That is to make sure that we leverage with other funding partners. We also look to manage external funding. We work a lot with the DCI, where they either have grant funding or special programs that they are running, where we can consolidate the funding possibility for our clients, and that combination does help to minimize the impact on the client. Chair, we have highlighted on slide 24 the major subsidiaries, and again, when we came to the committee, we highlighted that these were our areas of focus, and David has mentioned a little bit on the work we are doing on them. But if I can just do a bit of a detail, we have four, which is in the steel manufacturing space, and it has been impacted significantly as well with the economic conditions that we are faced with. We did indicate to the committee last time that we were going through a process of getting a strategic equity partner to work with us on SCORE and possibly to give us that technical support and maybe the funding going forward for SCORE, because it is one of the strategic entities for the country. We are targeting to finalize this process by the third quarter of 2017. It's very close to the end, and it's gone through our board discussions quite a few times, and therefore we expect that the impact of the strategic equity partner and the funding will get SCORE moving forward a stronger entity that could actually assist in strengthening the economic impact. On the FOSCO subsidiary, Chair, we also highlighted that FOSCO was getting challenged with being a price taker in their products, but also their plant was needing some revamping, and they are continuing on that plant replacement program as necessary, but also they've tried to go through a strategy of beneficiating some of their products to ensure that they can get further income that would not have come through, as it is important that we minimize any job losses that may come out of FOSCO. So in the next 5 years, we expect also that FOSCO would be turned around and improve performance, and it is also another strategic entity for us. CIFA is in the same business that we are in, and it is also challenged equally with the economic impact. Also because of the kind of entities that they work with, being small and medium enterprises, we are working very closely with CIFA with all the improvements and processes we've implemented within the IDC to just make sure that we share the knowledge, we share the resources, we share the system, and we working towards ensuring that the impairment impact that they're experiencing can be improved and reduced through implementing some of the processes that we have implemented. Chair, on the 14th of February, there was an approval for the National Empowerment Fund to be yet another subsidiary of the IDC. That process is on the go. It's not been finalized in terms of the full implementation. We are in the transition phase, and we are working very closely with the NEF. So the numbers that we show here in this corporate plan don't yet represent the impact of consolidating the NEF, but we do anticipate that by the end of this financial year, we probably have done a full consolidation. But through our board, the transitional arrangement includes the monitoring processes of the NEF even in this financial year. If I go to slide 25, just at very high level, to show the key metrics that we monitor and the key financial numbers. Chair, as David indicated, in the current year, we anticipate a baseline to disburse about 100 billion, it's 96 billion rand, at base, and we, if we were to achieve target, it would be 123 billion. So that disbursement would have to be funded through us borrowing money. We have external funds that we borrow, and we anticipate in the next 5 years we would borrow about 57 to 58 billion rand. A very small portion coming from foreign entities, mm-hmm. significantly use our local market through bonds, through bilaterals with banks. And Chair, as the CEO indicated, we constantly try to nurture this relationship because it is critical for us to continuously be able to work with these entities to find the IDC. We manage this as well with the proceeds from sale of our mature investments, just to make sure that we can find new requirements. Those that can stand on their own and are able to get out of our stable, we do release in our space, and therefore we get some funding from the sale of those shares. Chair, we then have the board has given us a few metrics, including a debt equity ratio that says we should not exceed about 60% of our borrowings. Although the Act allows us to borrow up to 100%, the board has said for financial sustainability, let's try and limit at 60%. So we monitor that very closely, and we are still within that number over a five-year period. We also monitor the impairment that we don't go over 20% of our book to be impaired. And in the 5 years, we anticipate that we will still stay within that threshold. Our other income here comes from the dividends that we get from the entities that we've invested in, and that is of great assistance to basically monitor our financial sustainability and our self-funding model. We anticipate, as the CEO highlighted earlier, that the borrowing costs could rise with the downgrade situation. We have interacted greatly with the entities that fund us to basically say, you know, as we have contracts with you, let's just make sure that we continue to work together, because as we know, some entities do take a view to stop funding, but we've had a very good conversation with them that they will continue funding us, but it may take longer. It also may be a bit more expensive, which could affect our financial sustainability. Chair, that is the basis on the financial numbers, and a very stretched set of numbers that we will monitor and stress test as we go along. If I just quickly go through slide 26, this is just to give the committee a sense of the kind of money we borrow in 1 year. So if you just look at 2017, we did our business with a budget approval of about 12 billion. We showed the numbers as of January in terms of where we were, but as we have now closed the year, we have actually gotten close to the 12 billion in terms of the money that we have borrowed through the public bonds or the loans. And in the 2018 financial year, there will be about 11 billion that we may have to raise, both to finance new business or to refinance some of our facilities that may be coming to maturity. And therefore, that contributes to the long-term borrowing plan of about 57, 58 billion rand. So, Chair, that is how we monitor financial sustainability, and indeed we stress test these numbers on a continuous basis as activities happen. In terms of the 2017-18 disbursements, we are planning to disburse about 14.5 billion rand. Yes, 17-18 financial year. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Just to highlight what the role of the audit committee is. Our role as the audit committee chair is to monitor and play that oversight role and make sure that all the government processes are followed. One of the key things that is already
always monitor the requirements. Once you understand that, that we have a DFI, which takes more risk than the commercial bank, because if people go to commercial bank, they might not find funding, especially without the strength of the balance sheet. So they will come to us. So we do understand our money in the DFI. But also bear in mind the sustainability of the DFI. So we do monitor this. We have post-investment monitoring, just to make sure that we are closer to our customers, we understand, we know our customers. In times of distress, we do not have to wait in them until they come to us that they need difficulty. So we've got that constant monitoring. And cost-income ratio is also another key factor, because whilst we have revenue streams that are coming through, we do not want to have more costs. So we manage costs, because those are, some of them are within our control. We do understand that obviously the cost of borrowing is going to increase after having been downgraded. So we monitor that closely. The cost income ratio, we have two scenarios. We look at cost income ratio before impairment and after impairment, just to make sure that we are still in line with our budget. And then, of course, we also look at jaws. Jaws means our cost movement between 1 year to another. Versus revenue. You don't want to have cost increasing more than revenue, so that's what we monitor as well. So we also have these guys, I'm sure, and we all see that our subsidiaries are really busy. So we have meetings with the subsidiaries where executives come and do presentations so that you can understand the depth of the problems that they are facing. So that's really what we do. Obviously, I have constant meetings outside the audit committee with the CFO, with the internal auditor, as well as the external auditor, just so that I'm up to date as to what is happening. And then I also sit on the DIC. Once we do approvals, at the back of my mind, I say, goodness, I want that the intent is zero. So one has to balance all that, because have to make sure that you do this best, as well as at the same time, whilst I'm wearing my cap as an audit committee chair, you get impairment. But nevertheless, we're quite positive with what is happening in IDC. We'll continue monitoring. Thank you.
Check on slide 27 is becoming a source of the end of our presentation. Would like to believe, Chair, that the plan is indeed over, but we do appreciate that there are risks which we have to continuously mitigate. So we highlight them there, because we have significant investments that are impacted by the economic crisis. But also we are alive to the macroeconomic environment. CFO, I think David spoke about the droughts. I know the Western Cape is not out of the woods yet, but the other parts of the country. So we have looked at initiatives where we work with the land banks, so that we can try and assist some of those initiatives here. And the issue of pricing, which the CFO has spoken about, I think is very important. It's something that we have to be alive to, and hence we have specific interventions to ensure that the pricing is appropriate. We don't want it to be prohibitive, but the pricing that is sustainable, the pricing that encourages development, especially since the chair says we need to see development in our lifetime. And the chair, there are some also pronouncements that will come that we have to monitor them. I mean, the issues of carbon tax, we know we have to be aligned with the environment, but we also have to be alive to the impact that they will have on the subsidiaries. But also, Chair, broadly, I think as an organization, we say here we have a plan that is robust, but we are not going to underplay some of the risks, and that's why we have to proactively ensure that we respond to it. I think all of this, Chair, I know David has raised it, but I just want to underscore that, Chair. The issue of transformation is sensitive. It's one of our key developmental objectives. started, which is why 2 years ago we really spent time and effort in putting in resources to support vaccination, because we believe that as we play our role in growing this economy, it is important that we transform to ensure that it's sustainable. So we've done it in different parts, as ourselves with IT, but also collaborating. I mean, there's one initiative that we do in the Department of Training, as well as you know, the committee members know, the DCI has the grant element in the Blackhead as well. And ourselves, we have the debt facility or the equity facility, which we blend that. And we see a good success. This for us gives comfort in that here we're playing our role and showing that the black participants are actually actively involved in the economy. The other initiative that we've done is to go out of our way and stretch ourselves to ensure that we make the environment even more easier for youth entrepreneurs. And last year we had a youth conference in Midlands, where I was very encouraged to see young entrepreneurs who come up with great ideas. And we're not complaining. What they wanted was an opportunity to be funded so that their dreams could be realized. And we've looked at our processes to say how do we strengthen them and how do we ensure that we make it easier. That we've done through the collaboration which we have with NYDA and CIFA to ensure that as youth entrepreneurs come up, they are giving an opportunity. So in conclusion, Chair, we are committed as the IDC to play our role. We appreciate the environment has changed significantly, and if Moody's was to further downgrade the country, particularly on the domestic side as well, so that would even be more difficult, Chair. We can't underplay that. We shouldn't underplay that as a country. But it does not mean it's all doom and gloom, because it also provides us opportunities to look at ourselves as a country to say, are there opportunities for import replacement? And this is one role that we are playing in country. In fact, what we're doing, we don't have it in the slides, hopefully start to show some results here for this financial year, where we're partnering with National Treasury. We say at the back of the government's procurement spend, let's see for opportunities for import. Let's see for opportunities for transformation. So we're working with them to try and unpack what is government structure and what is government import, so that we have a good sense of it. And it's those collaborations for us that I would like to believe here will indeed positively contribute. I mean, yesterday we made a soft tendering for the expansion of a plant where we are in partnership with Beijing Autoworks, the Chinese entity, where they will be moving from a semi-lockdown to a complete lockdown as far as the taxis are concerned, which is a competition to Toyota. For me, if we have initiatives like those, where long-term investment comes from foreign investment, it is something that we have to embrace. So that investment, that commitment by BAW is coming in a time when it's tough, it's a long-term investment, that encourages us. That for me is the role that development finance institutions must continue to play. Encourage foreign investment, partner with those foreign investments, but take a long-term view, even when times are tough. Doing all of that, Chair, without being reckless, which is why today we have the chair of the audit committee here, because when it's all said and done, we are custodians of government resources, and it is important that we play our role in ensuring that they are used for the right purpose, so that they are also continuously invested for the future. Thank you very much, Chair, and your committee members, for allowing us to do.
Thank you so much. The leadership of the IDC. We really appreciate the presentation as usual, presented with clarity and a sense of commitment. That's what we always want to hear. And I know I'll be speaking on behalf of everyone here that you continue to make us proud, years, there might be shortcomings there and there, but I think in overall we are just happy. We know that you can't satisfy us with all things. There ought to be some that are not happy with one or two things. But you are on the right track in terms of transformation as per the information you've just given us. We would want to open now the floor for questions and comments. Mr. Atkinson, Mayor Rancho,
thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much to the IDC for the presentation today, a very comprehensive presentation. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, but I just want to make a comment before I make the questions. I do understand that trading conditions are very difficult for you, obviously with the downgrades, the potential increase in the cost of funding, and also the state of the economy. So I was just saying I'm rather pleased to hear about how seriously you take this issue of impairments and the fact that you are looking at all the loans very, very closely. So I do think this is something that could actually have an effect on the existence of IDC if it's not that constant. So we are in a critical position at the moment. So I'm very pleased to hear about what you were saying to us earlier about quite how seriously you take the whole impairment issue, which is great. And then coming to my questions, I just want to ask a question about the FIFA will assist that the President signed and how that will impact upon the loans that you give, because obviously you're moving more towards a world where people are very concerned about TTP, about politically connected persons. And certainly I'm quite sure you get lots and lots of requests from TTPs for loans. So how will that change your attitude or the way that you deal with loans, and how will the future will change? And then talking about TTPs, I'd just like a little bit of update on how the Shiba Uranium loan is going, particularly with the view, I don't know what the IDC has taken into account about the potential delay in a possible nuclear deal, so how will that affect the loan and the potential repayments of it up to date. And then on the project evolved, very clearly we mentioned about the whole concept behind it is a fourth industrial revolution. And we know that one of the main features of the fourth industrial revolution is the potential loss of jobs. Now, the one thing that we do know at Tanzania that probably will not be affected by the fourth industrial revolution and will create jobs is the whole issue around tourism. So we see quite a lot about investing money in agriculture, chemicals, and movies, which are all great. But I think, obviously, part of the strategy is not only trying to empower the very rich people your Black Industries program, but to create more jobs for people who really, really do need them. And I think tourism is a major issue there. One of the interesting points that was brought up by the Minister was one of the challenges facing tourism is infrastructure. So, you know, while we'd like to get a lot of five-star guests from Cape Town up to Eastern Cape, we have an issue of roads, airports, hotels, five-star hotels, things like that. So does the IDC have any strategy at all around tourism or any intention to invest? I think that really is kind of one of the fundamental ways of also future-proofing ourselves against the fourth industrial revolution. And then just the final question is, I just noticed that some of the money that we get comes from the EFI as a multilateral organization. So I was just wondering who in particular amongst the
Thank you.
thank you very much, Chair. I'm going to be very brief. Thank you very much to the IGC. My question will relate to your, in the past 2 years, have been brought in safeguards. And now there is an impending incorporation of the National Empowerment Fund. My knowledge tells me that there's always something good when you consolidate or in-house your financial institutions, provided the goals are very clear, and that the deal for the making of that statement is beneficial to the public purpose. There's always something bad when the other is actually a crippled organization, and that turns the relationship and the entire deal into a parasitic arrangement. For instance, IGC do not get anything from government annually, meaning we don't get injected, unlike National Empowerment Fund. Now, if this deal with National Empowerment Fund to be consolidated and be, I would say, marshaled and be guided by the IGC, what will it do long term in the financial sustainability of IGC? Will it mean that they will now have to get, as a subsidiary, they will now have to get direct allocation from IGC rather than dependent on the state injection, as it has always been the case? And also, the stated goals of what National Empowerment Fund was supposed to do, have you seen it fitting within your stated goals going forward? For instance, is there a fit in this arrangement, or is just a marriage of convenience with a pending divorce? Obviously, when one minister decides this is not working out. And then the last part of my question is, there is always something good about junk status, in particular for development finances, like organizations like yourselves, because then some of the things that inspires you that have not been inspiring you under normal circumstances, but you too also, you get into the hype of capitalism, and as such you tend to rush for what works. But then something called junk asks you to do something deeper. It asks you to encourage people to start and be able to not rush big, but to start what you call real small medium-sized organizations. I think this country does not have that. And everybody wants to go big. And when everybody goes big, we later get told by the DA that jobs are not forthcoming. You know why jobs do not forthcome when you are big? It's because your imperatives when you are big, your shareholders, they become more conscious of what has to be made called profit. Whereas if you are medium-sized, the gentleman who manages that company or the lady that manages that company is always managing it with a stated assumption, knowing what has to be achieved. Meaning he's able to run it consciously without the rush of shareholders and many others with other interests. And as such, people like that, they tend to create more sustainable jobs at a local level than those that end up becoming big and they get big for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let's also thank the IGC for their beautiful presentation. Thank you, the Chair and the Commission, that warned us in advance that we were going to be a very small group. Perhaps said in the document today was going to be small, so that we could have contacted
thank you. take notes.
But otherwise, the presentation is very interesting, and we can't stop appreciating the wonderful job that the IDC is doing. But we'll always have a few questions to ask because we're looking ahead in terms of sustainability, in terms of seeing the net impact happening in our community. My first question, Chair, relates to SCORE and FOSCORE. We know for a fact that the IDC has invested a lot of money in the two entities, and we don't expect you to solve this problem just like as an event. Obviously, there is a lot that is involved here. But I'm a little bit concerned. I see, as far as SCORE is concerned, your strategy is around hoping that a partner, the strategic partner that you are acquiring, will come to the rescue of this entity. However, if you look generally at the situation around the steel industry in the county generally and all over the world, it is not very, very good. I want to understand why you think that having a partner under the circumstances, a partner for SCORE, will necessarily help to improve the situation. I think you need to go beyond that. Perhaps if you could just tell us what your plans are. The same applies to FOSCO. There isn't much improvement in FOSCO. The losses, the deficits are becoming larger and larger. But we know there is no magic wand. However, it is the responsibility of the executive of the IDC to try and find a workable way out. If you could just expatiate a little bit on that. The next one is around what you are saying about an increased attention on follow-up on collections from clients. This is a very encouraging statement. But I think it is important for us to know who are the typical clients that requires you to make serious follow-ups. Who are those clients who are giving this problem? And what are these measures? What are some of these measures, these new measures that you are contemplating taking in making sure that you get this money spent? I went very much on the LDF issue because issues have been raised about it. My concern on the National Empowerment Fund is that they are being brought to you while they already have something like 713 million deficits. We would like to know from yourself, as you go into this arrangement with them, what are you saying about this deficit already so that they don't necessarily affect you negatively right from the beginning? What is the arrangement that you are going into? Yes, they are going to become an entity. But of what good is this arrangement to the IDC? And the next question relates to the 95 million that has been allocated to you from the Treasury, which is for the Steel Development Fund. Do you already have some plans for this money? What are those plans? Are you looking at the new entrance into the economy, you are interested, or are you looking to save those companies that are going down with this money? And lastly, there's already been issues raised around the paradigm of the economy, the radical economic transformation. If you could perhaps try to explain, as you closed the plenary, you did say quite a lot about what your plans are to make sure that there is impact. But could you just try and relate that directly, for instance, to township businesses
and also to those struggling in the rural area, how that relates to that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning. Good morning, ICC. Thank you very much for your presentation. Really appetizing after the long I will not even go to the country because such was the matter that he has said. I will not go to it, but I will just ask the corporate on the buying capacity. What is the problem so far? Because I haven't heard that in the presentation or I missed it. I also love the closing of the conclusion when you say they are making they are committed to make an impact in the provinces. Since our last engagement, because it has been my worry in terms of other provinces, the investment was the gap was too much. What significant improvements have been made since our last engagement? I'm saying this because I recently had an outside from a constituency and we spoke very well about how this community and how can they access people and where can they find the entity. But so far they can't even access a simple application form on our website. They can't get anybody on the line to access them. My constituency is not like the rural. You tell the rural if one can send it for internet. Everything you send them on the internet, go and access the application form for ICC dollars. Now my question is, what is it that you are doing to assist such communities to make that impact that you are doing for our people to know your existence and improve the development, to province? Thank you.
I think the other of mega projects, I think we need to have a target, maybe even the mega project, is a baseline. So that even if the money can't be, we know the money can't be equal. You know, I think we are clear on that as well. The other matter, you know, on page 18, we talk about the interest, and already in that amount, already 50% already in the line. Now I think it will assist that in that 50%, we don't really want to know who has all of that. I think it's important that at least to say that these three provinces who have received so much in the future. But you're still finishing projects. You don't. Then in the bigger book, and you find it in this. Corporate planning up with the same page, which says the abuse is 50%. It's 4.11. But it goes with that like instead of making it so that the color is the last one, the 95 million which was asked for still the weather fund, I think if they can clarify how it's going to be challenged, that's okay. We understand the situation around here, you know, that you need it.
I was just saying that I've submitted a number of questions relating to the IDC policy on politically exposed persons and the disclosure of information around those people in the past. And the Minister has answered my question fairly recently. He said that you reviewed your confidentiality policy as he asked you to do, and that from 1st of April, all new contracts that you've entered into, you will indicate to the PEPs that you're entitled to make publicly available all relevant information around their identities and beneficial ownership of companies. I want to know what is the position for all those contracts and loans prior to the 1st of April 2017. I mean, is it, how will that information be made publicly available? Are you prepared to make it publicly available? And then finally, the question on SCORE and FOSCORE. This corporate plan I see is dated February 2017, and at the time of writing, you had envisaged projected losses of 689 million rand for SCORE in 2016-17, and an envisaged loss of 822 million for FOSCORE. Are those the final figures? If not, can you tell us what the final losses for 2016 and 2017 are? I mean, I know you've been in talks since at least October 2015, or talks that you've made active steps to try and include strategic equity partners as far as the SCORE is concerned. What's the likelihood of just getting shot at them altogether, setting them off, and why is the process taking so long? Thank you.
I didn't get the first question quite.
Essentially, I want to know what is the proportion of your impairments to your overall portfolio this year and your after-tax loss. Yeah, please.
You had the first question, that was the second question that Dr. Kaji, the first one I also missed. Because I have that one and the second question, the one that you just have to touch
That was my first question. There were two components to it. The second
Just want to understand the sale of the intended sale of 2.9 billion worth of equity investment in which area? Because I tried to look at the main document. It's not quite clear to me. When I look at your corporate plan for this year, you intend to save about and create about 104,000 direct jobs. I just want to understand what really informs this number. Where are you taking the numbers from? It will be important perhaps if we can get the first factor that we are clear to the labor team. What each sector contributes to that. While I understand the priority around financial sustainability, you seem to be emphasizing that it is important to focus on that, which I agree with you. But I just want to get the that vis-a-vis your impact in the community. I just want to find out if nothing's going to be a compromise in that process. I know the chair did that saying that while we're doing this, that we need really to focus our attention on some financial sustainability. And that is related to what the first part of what the Minister was talking about around perhaps trying to sustain yourself at the expense of the first I want to check with you. I also had a question around the core equity partnership. But I'll just reduce it to it's quite clear that this is a bit advanced. When I do think is that somewhere in the third quarter you intend to finalize the issue around the equity partnership. When exactly is that? And I also have a concern as to whether, like Babusian, whether is it really going to make any difference? I think that the partner is so much going to make such a difference. Visiting, for instance, both codes were quite clear that around Bacalago. I think should be issues around Matisse challenges around the area. I'm not too sure how are you intending to resolve that. You saying your focus for this financial year would be more on the negotiation. Just want you to expand a bit on that so that I'm able to understand. Bearing in mind the what was happening now around the copper mine, the Buffalo copper mine, the community concern. We understand what is happening there, but sometimes you also want to take charge of some of these issues. Especially want to also address, maybe my question might follow on NEF, because I also have a question around the NEF.
I don't like it. Thank you.
Okay, can we come back? Chair, I just remembered my question, my other question that I wanted to pose. It's not a question, it's an addition to the question that was already asked. It was approached in another manner, but I wanted to add on that question to say the info that is required of for PPs, can we get it from the inception? And also if that is available, so that it also is able to provide us with the generational people, like beneficiaries, you see? Because from the inception, when IDC was started, there should have been beneficiaries in terms of the PPs. Who are those, and those generations coming after, who are still benefiting, if there are still those companies existing currently, who are those, which are those companies, if that information is going to be availed. Because we'd want to know which companies are still in existence and who are beneficiaries currently of those PPs. Because it's a very, very, it should be dealt with if we want to deal with it in totality, so that we also are able to deal with a clear, to have a clear picture of what's really happening in that area. Are you ready now? Thank you.
Chair, thank you. Thank you for the questions from the committee members. Very thought-provoking, insightful, and we truly appreciate it. I think, as I said at the beginning, Chair, this is the interaction that we really always do. Because it makes us, gives us a chance to look at our business and ensure that as we understand it, other people also do the same. And particularly with yourselves, as you have constituencies, you go there, you get the feedback, and then you get that feedback. So we truly appreciate that, Chair. As we did the presentation, we did it jointly, so is the answering of the questions. So I will do the very easy ones, and then the difficult ones will be done by the rest of the team. Chair, there's been some which we will cluster, so I will not go through each member, but what we'll try and do at the end is just to do a check to make sure that we've covered everyone. So, because there's been some of them which are common, for an example, the downgrade, the NEF, score, force score, it touches a number of parts of that. Let me start with NEF, because I think it is coming, I've been checking how many times some of them have come in. Now, Mr. Mbata said maybe it's a marriage of convenience,
yeah.
Which will result in a divorce very later. Indeed, NEF has been receiving funding from government. But if my memory does not fail me, the last 2 years at least, they have not been receiving any funding. In fact, it could even be more. But how we see this opportunity for us, for NEF to be a subsidiary of the IDC, is that firstly, it will allow the IDC to be in sectors that IDC is not investing. For an example, we don't do retail in its entirety. But also, it will allow, it will discourage a situation where some entrepreneurs, and we can't blame them, they're entrepreneurs, they have to be entrepreneurial. They'll come to the IDC for pricing, they'll come to the NEF for pricing. Because we do, in some instances, co-invest, but some instances invest, so that government money can be focused on specific, so that we don't necessarily result in maybe them benefiting on a lower pricing, whereas they couldn't. So that will allow us. but also with the experience the NEF has had over time on BE. We've done a lot of BEs ourselves as IDC and in our numbers because of the size of our balance sheet, but also some of their experiences and some of the lessons and some of the players, we can share notes and we can improve on those. So for us, that gives us that. But also, because they've also invested in some of the early stage businesses, and I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen some of their recent performance not being at the level where it should be, because now they have to start to impair some of that investment. Because naturally, when you take high risk, particularly at early stage, it takes time for those investment to materialize. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. Sometimes they just not perform. Now, if you don't have a bigger balance sheet like the IDC, when times are tough, you don't have those shock absorbers. So those lessons that we have learned as the IDC, we can share with them even much closer as a subsidiary, so that we ensure that then when we've paid the school fees, they don't have to pay the school fees. So that's the other benefit that we see for ourselves working closely as the IDC. Now, also, we've had the benefit of looking at other international DFIs. There's a DFI in Brazil, which is very key and instrumental in the development of that. And one finds that some aspects of development finance, actually housed in one area, it becomes easier for them to, when they look for an example. I think there was a question that was asked to say, I actually smiled to say, I think it's Mr. Piccinini, I think he said, we should have one mega project in every province. So we'll come back to that. So, but now the when we have that project, there's lots of advantages in that. One of them, which I want to look at, is that we can at the back of those big have small and medium sized enterprises so that they provide inputs. Because those ones, and I think as you all yourself, Mr. Mata, have so appropriately highlighted, they create more jobs much quicker than the big ones. Mm. Now, if we have, which is what another reason why we at CIFO, by the way, as part of us, that when we look at these big projects as IDC, let's also look at opportunities for the small and medium-sized enterprises. Because history has proven to us that in the past we look at this big project, but we don't actually follow up in terms of who provides the input and all of it. So those are some of the benefits that we see we will come in into this. I'm not underplaying the financial position that they are in.
Yeah.
I'm not underplaying that at all. And it will be important for us to look at it. In fact, in terms of the processes, we would look at their balance sheet. We would look at to see whether is there any need for us to do any further review of their books to see whether they need. So we'll do all of that. We'll have to do it properly. And if anything, I'm sure the chair of the board is here. She's not going to allow us just to take it and not and understand. So as we try and have this relationship, we'll ensure that we understand it so that we don't suffer from indigestion once we have it. So I think it's very important. So there's but when I look at it broadly, I think at the end it can only benefit South Africa because we want to make sure that we cover all areas. Now, the other part which we've seen is we try and encourage new entrepreneurs. I think there's a question that was asked to say we need to help new ones, smaller ones, not necessarily the ones that are established, because those ones will know how it's done. So, and we find that some of the easier sectors to do are largely smaller ones, and you want to encourage them so that people gradually graduate. I'm not saying everybody should start there, but I mean, history has taught us if they do the small ones, they could. So that will also give us an opportunity to really, from the experiences, do that. So I think if we look at the good and the bad, I think on balance it will be a good one. It's not going to be an easy one. I'm not saying for once we will, by the stroke of the pen, we will. Because also there's two institutions, there's different cultures. But we've done that with CIFA. It was not an easy one with small finance enterprise, but I think they're getting into it. And for also the support that we've given CIFA, I think we will also learn from that and do it a little bit better, which is why I think the CFO spoke about the transitional arrangement, because now we're in this period to say, okay, as we are in this process, so that we understand a little bit more about the NEF, its workings, and so that as we now are going to incorporate it. And also we have, in terms of the process, we have the shareholder, we have a departmental levels, which is the Department of Economic Development and Department of Trade and Industry, so we have a steering committee. But also there's a committee which is led by the chair of the IDC and the chair of CIFA, myself, and the CEO the chair of the IDC and the chair of the NEF, together with myself and the CEO of the NEF, to ensure that the process goes on well. And then also we have the next level, which is the executives, because we want to make sure that we do it properly. Because it has taken, I mean, we've been talking about this taken long, and we want to ensure that the South African entrepreneurs do not suffer as a result of that. So that's on the NEF. So if I've missed something, we will come back to that. That's on the NEF. Now, I will touch on SCORE and FORSCORE, but there are specific financial questions which were asked, which the CFO will refer to. let me start with FORSCORE. As I said, the chair will do the easy one, so I'll do it. So on FORSCORE, chair, the IDC board approved in the previous financial year a lot of money to really turn FORSCORE around. Now, I'm glad, and I actually had forgotten that the committee went to Palabora, so I'm glad the chair just reminded me. Now, FORSCORE is two businesses. Well, it's two plants. There's in Palabora, which is the mine. In the mine, you have phosphate, and you've got magnetite, predominantly. I mean, I'm simplifying it. And then in Richards Bay, we have the biggest thing is phosphoric acid, and the granular, which they call P2O5, granular. Acid is P2O5 and granular. Now, simplistically, you mine the rock, you dig, you blast, you mill it, you put it on the rail, it goes all the way to Richards Bay, you take that rock, which is now like powder, you put in sulfur, and you put in any other chemicals, and out comes acid. That acid, you convert some of it into granular, which we use as fertilizer, we blend it. So when you go to a Pick n Pay or whatever, you get some granulars, so that is a blend. Normally it will be NPK, nitrogen, phosphate, and potassium, so that's that. So you do that. So one part comes from FORSCORE. Now, one of the reasons why FORSCORE has been poor in performance is the plant in Richards Bay has been very old. For the people like Mr. Atkinson here would remember a gentleman called Louis Late. So he started that plant in Richards Bay, which IDC over time, because he was exporting to Brazil and it didn't work out, IDC put in money in the 1970s and all of it. So it's been an old plant, and a chemical plant has got tendencies of corrosion and whatever. When the IDC board put in money was to really put it back and make sure that it works. That's been the biggest part. There has been a capital expenditure to the mines to make sure that the equipment is modernized and all of it, but the mine has predominantly been working. The only thing in the mine which has also contributed is they needed to move to a different part. They called it the North Pit. Please don't ask me why it's called the North Pit. So they said the North Pit and where they mined it. Now, when one looks at FORSCORE and other fertilizer companies or companies that use phosphate, because phosphate is just part of one, there's lots of other fertilizers, there's phosphate. The rest of the continent, in fact, phosphate is the most used one. Others, is that on a competitive basis, FORSCORE is more expensive, relatively, because they have to blast. Whereas if you go to other places, there's very little blasting because the rock is very soft, so you just grind it. And also, they have to transport it. So that is a disadvantage, but they still have to make it work anyway. So there's been a lot of effort on the modernizing of the plant, which we're starting to see results coming up. And in fact, the fact that we export the bulk of the phosphoric acid, largely to India, largely because India is the biggest market, but there's also others. And now, Fosco, in line with other players, the price taker. So there's people who talk about hard commodities and soft commodities. So that is one soft commodity. So the commodity price also has impact. Now, the CEO of Fosco says he always prays for the rand to be weak. So, but I don't think it's a good prayer. So when the rand is weak, he benefits, and he recovers from the soft. So we've seen in time, since actually 2009, with all the commodities, when the commodities were soft, the phosphoric acid price has been soft. That's another position which has also contributed to that. But having said that, I think in the strategies that the Fosco management, as the chair of the audit said, we have what we call deep dives, because there's one thing which the board of IDC has really focused on, even more than any other thing, is those subsidiaries, particularly SCO and Fosco. So there's been a lot of time and attention to ensure that we are online, what we promised happens. So I would say, as the CFO would say, what they promised is the performance. They're not out of the woods yet by any stroke of imagination, but I think they are going the right way. That is on Fosco. CFO, you heard if I've missed something. On SCO, Chair. Oh, no, sorry. There's one thing on Fosco. You mentioned the magnetite. So I, as I said, in there there's phosphate rock, which gets to phosphoric acid. And then there's magnetite. Now, magnetite, I'm trying to make, it's a cheaper version of iron ore, just simplistically, that's what it is. Because you have to do a little bit of more work to increase the iron ore content. What Kumba has, I mean, that's real iron ore, in the Sishen plant, for an example. But what you find in Fosco, you still have to do a lot of work to almost bring it to that. So the beneficiation of iron ore, because iron ore actually came out from the process as they were mining phosphoric acid. It was not like it was the core thing. But because particularly the plants in China can use magnetite, they blend it so that you reduce their cost, but also their furnaces are designed to be able to do that. So that has helped in us to say, oh, there's actually value in that. So instead of just exporting magnetite as it is, because now in there there's lots of impurities, I mean the bulk of it will not use, but let's rather increase the iron content at source, so that what we export is got more value. So that's what Fosco will be doing. So now, Che, when you were there, there's also a company next to Fosco. It's called Phalaborwa Copper. It used to be called PMC. It used to be Rio Tinto. Yes, that one. So when the Chinese actually bought, in fact, we are actually 20% shareholders in that. When they bought into that, the main thing they bought was magnetite. There was no copper. It was magnetite. Because, as I said, there are plants in China can be able to use it. So that's why we've now Fosco has got a smaller part of the same thing, because it comes from the same reef and whatever. So Fosco is all of it. Now Fosco is also now going to beneficiate it, which is why there's an element, this reference to beneficiating that. Because they've been exporting it, but now they have to beneficiate it, increase the iron content so that you attract more value than you would had we just put it on rail and just export it to China. So that's the beneficiation that we're talking about, which is PMC is doing quite well, and they've been doing it well. The only thing is now, PMC, what it's doing now is also going on the copper side, which we I think last time we presented a project here to this committee during our plans, where we approved funding to Phalaborwa Copper, where we were going to ensure that their copper smelters are environmental friendly and all of that. So that's on the beneficiation of.
So are you saying there's going to be cooperation between the two on the magnetite? Or is it a matter of competition between the two?
No, Chair. There's no need for cooperation, because they serve. I mean, they coexist. so there isn't. I mean, the technologies they use are slightly different. They're not materially different, they're slightly different, but there's room for them to, the markets in China are just about enough. Also there's a project which we are doing as ITC. I'm glad you asked that question, Chico, because I nearly forgot about it. We funded a technology that's also going to use magnetite, okay? So that magnetite is going to be reduced into briquettes, almost like briquettes, and that magnetite is going to be used in time for those that normally use scrap in their steel manufacturing process. So that will almost be like a scrap substitution. We call it MIBS, which we funded. So they're busy testing that. So they are using the Palabora copper magnetite for that. They're not using phosphorus, because Palabora, the stockpile for Palabora magnetite is 10 times what Fosco has. So Fosco's got it, but it's small, but Palabora copper is 10 times that. So it's going to last us years. It's going to uplift all of us. So they're using that magnetite. So they'll be using it for people like SCORE and all of those that normally use scrap, and we know all the challenges that come with scrap. They can then substitute that. So that's it. So the short answer is yes, there will be coexistence, but not necessarily collaboration. So that's on for SCORE. On SCORE, so the process is way far advanced. So let me start at the end. So now we're at the process where we've engaged with the shareholder, because these are large investments, so we need to get, in terms of the PFMA, we need to get the shareholder's approval, represented by the Minister of Economic Development, and we're at the verge of getting that approval. That's one, but I'm starting at the end. Because once we get that, then we need to notify this in terms of the Competition Commission, because some of the players might need to be there. Now, let me go back. When we started the process, we wanted to sell this thing as one package, get one equity player to buy. It became clear that there's no appetite for that. In fact, even before IDC got involved, that was the Anglo's hope and wish. So, but we've gone through the process, which was very transparent. We advertised in the newspapers. We gave people time. They gave us the sense of who they are and whatever. We had both some local, but mostly international. And we asked them who they are, what value they're going to do. So we engaged an independent player, we engaged an advisor player. We engaged an independent advisors to look at this, but also we got accountants to also value the business for us so that we get an indication and all of that, after having naturally gotten all the approvals from our board. So we went through the process. People were shortlisted. They were allowed to do a due diligence. We did a due diligence on them. So now, as we speak, there's broadly, let me say broadly, three, the business will be sold in three parts. So there's the one part, which is the, it produces grinding media, but I'm trying to find it. It's like balls, like steel balls, which are used in the mining. So whenever you take out the ore from the mine, so they'll put those in there. So that's grinding media. So that's that. So we have a partner which the talks are far advanced. And once we get all the necessary approvals, they'll probably sign and then we'll move. That's one part. And then we have, that's an international player. So, but we're not going to be going out completely. IDC will also stay in as a percentage and whatever. So all of that, so the board has got sight of that. We also have one other part, which includes the wires and the other part, we call it RemainCo. So there's other parts of SCORE, but it's also got wires and processing. So that is a local player. Also there, we've made significant progress. And so once we get the approvals, I think we're on the page, we'll be able to sign. So I think, which is why the CFO, naturally, we need to make sure that we get the competition approval. And I think that's probably one part which might take a little bit longer, because we need a local player and we need to get the competition approval. So, but how it's packaged it, we think we should be fine. And then there's one part of the business. So now, whenever you've looked at the performance of SCORE, that part of the business has been the one that has been struggling most relative to the other two. That largely relies on providing, it's called a cast product. It's largely reliant on work from Transnet, largely, because it does wheels, it does work for the coupling, the everything that goes with it. Now, as we know, Transnet having slowed down because of the economic environment, that has impacted them. And I think most of the losses actually come from that unit. So there we've identified a player also internationally. They're finalizing their second round of their due diligence, so hopefully. But they are very keen and they're experienced, and we know that. And so, which is why I think the timing which the CFO has mentioned is very realistic, because significant progress. I mean, we've made significant progress in terms of talking, and the team has been very close. Now, which is why, in spite of the, because I think the question was, are these technical partners the magic wand? In spite of the difficult environment in which we find ourselves, but because it's divided into three, and they've got technical abilities and also the markets, because they're also bringing in the markets that they were bringing in, which is what we wanted. We wanted somebody with technical abilities, somebody who's empowered, somebody who's got the markets, and somebody who's going to also put in the capital, so it was very important. So which is why then, in spite of the difficult environment that was, the cast product is not going to be an easy one. I can say that. It's not. If I look at all three, that's going to be a difficult one. It's going to be the one that we have to nurse even more. Even in that one, IDC will continue to have a much larger stake relative to the others. So that's on score share. So I will take one easy one, and then I'll ask the CFO to answer the other so that I can catch my breath. So there was a question on where are we with the automotive plant in Port Elizabeth, the bike project. In fact, it's made headlines in the business day, the chair of the is. So in terms of the actual construction, we are behind, but we needed to do, we were fine to be behind as IDC, because we needed to make sure that the housekeeping orders are correct. Issues like local content, issues like opportunities for local players to be in place. In terms of the commitment, we have no doubt that it's there. In fact, the area has been leveled, so they've actually been starting to do more work for the foundations. So you don't see a building going up, but I think soon that will go up. So for that one, the commitment from BIKE is there. I have no doubt about that. They've been sending in senior delegation. We've raised issues because we've wanted this one, in fact, when we start producing these cars, they will be having a higher level of local content relative to the existing players. That's one. But also last year towards, I think beginning of this year, not last year, beginning of this year, they also started, they showcased one of the cars that will be manufactured here so that we can start waiting there. Although that is fully imported, that was in line with that. So they will be making those available here, so that people start to have a sense. But that's the first batch, which is fully important. But once we have the plant here, we will be manufacturing. So that's on back. CFO, if you allow me to take a water break.
Thank you, Chair. So if I just take a few financial related questions, I think the first one was about who are these international DFIs that we work with. We've had long-standing relationships with a few of them. One such is KfW, which is a German entity, so they've given us concessionary funding in a few groupings over the years, where they would probably be focusing on a developmental impact that they would require, and in the context of our strategies then, we would ensure that we channel that kind of funding, you know, in the environment that they require, and we have some monitoring processes with them to ensure that we use the funding as they've required. And I think in certain instances we've gone for second, third round of funding for specific projects. We also work with African Development Bank. Again, it's particular initiatives, and we reinforce these projects, and in certain instances it's just a straight line of funding that they give us. We also work with some European ones, EIB, AFD, and again, they're sometimes specific to their specific objectives. But we continue to nurture these relationships. I mean, we recently met with them, with the specifically the AFD quite recently, where they were saying to us they've got allocated funding for Africa, and we try to be first in line to tap into that kind of funding because it allows us to give concessionary, you know, further to our clients. So in general, that is basically the list that we work with. If I go to the question around the profitability numbers that we brought to the committee, I think a year back when we were bringing the corporate plan, the corporate plan that we did for the financial year ending 2016-17 was done around December 2015. So the events of December, because the impairment number is impacted a lot, but by the economic, or you know, the macroeconomic indicators that we put into our models. So when we came to the portfolio committee around this time, in 2016, we indicated that for that particular year, we were projecting as a starting point a loss of about 1.8 billion. And the bigger driver for that was the fact that we were expecting quite high impairments for that year. But now, from December projections to the March actual audited numbers, we saw a significant improvement in the actual impairment, because if you remember, there was quite a significant improvement as well in the economy in that particular 3 months. So we presented, I think it was around October when we visited the committee, where we shared the actual audited numbers of the IDC. And at that point in time, we shared with the committee that IDC had made a profit of 223 billion rand. It was 223 million rand that we reported to the committee, having projected before that in the corporate plan 1.8 billion. And the bigger contributor to that was the impairment we were expecting. And I think there was an element of the performance of our subsidiary. So we then finished last year at 223 million. The next question was, so what are we anticipating for March 2017, which is this current year? Chair, we've closed the year, but the audit is on the go at the moment. In the next few weeks, we will have final audited numbers. In terms of what we brought to the committee as a budget for the year, we do anticipate that we will do maybe a little better than that. We don't expect worse numbers than what we budgeted or the performance of the previous year. So we do anticipate that the performance may be better than the 223 that we presented to the committee, but we would request that we rather wait for the audited numbers so that it is at least a confirmation on the audited numbers. The question as a link to that was then the impairment number that goes with that profitability. So at the audit of 2016, we presented to the committee that our income statement impairment charge was 3.6 billion rand. And for the new budget, Chair, we had put in about 3.3 billion impairment charge that we expected in the income statement. But again, when we close the books now, we do anticipate that the impairment charge will be fairly within the numbers that we budgeted for, or even better, because we've not necessarily experienced the harms that we saw in 2016 financial year. So we should come well within our budget or even better than the previous year in terms of the impairments.
Follow up on that. I think it will help just to understand whether
Chair, on that, I think when we came to the committee, we highlighted, which goes in line with the slide that I showed, that the impairment is quite a significant focus, and I think the chair of the audit committee confirmed. We took a decision to focus a lot on making sure that we are very close to our investee entities in terms of the issues that they may be experiencing that we could assist with. And therefore, we will bring back the value of the impairment, but it would link to the fact that we are aware that the IDC does take risk. We do anticipate that some entities that we invest in may struggle, and we have to make that provision for them to be likely impaired for some of the investments. But we can bring the detail of the different things we look at, but there isn't specific internal issues that I could say result in the impairment, other than the fact that these are very risky investments, and the closeness to them assists to make sure that, you know, some of them, if we have to handhold and support through our business support programs, just to make sure they survive and do better, we do implement those kinds of things, which is then a beneficial impact to the risk of impairment. It helps to reduce the possibility of these entities being impaired. Chair, the other one was around collections. Now, there is a link there, because if the entity that we invest in is struggling, they cannot then pay back the IDC. So we are talking about a focus on collections, and it does link to the fact that where, for instance, we have assisted an entity, and many a times we give them moratorium so that they pick up and are able to stand before they can start paying the IDC. And the focus on collections is just to make sure that where we've entered an agreement with an entity and we've said, okay, we give you 18 to 24 months before you can start paying us, we are very close to them so that when that period comes, or even before that, we can see that they are progressing to that point. But also, the CEO normally says that, and if you are a creditor and you're not making sure that you are front in line, some people will just ignore the payment, even though they can afford. So the focus on collections just ensures that those that can actually afford know that IDC must be paid on a particular date of the month. Because as we indicated, a portion of us funding or disbursing further has to come from those entities that are doing okay, to be able to assist others. And the timing becomes critical, Chair, because at any point in the month, we should be able to disperse what is required. So it should not be that if a disbursement is required on the 14th, we wait for the 16th because somebody is to pay later. So we try to balance this to make sure that those that must pay on a particular date do pay because they can, so that we can further disperse. It is just staying close to the entities that can afford. The other question that talked to the issue of interest charge. So as we anticipate the impact of the downgrade raising the interest costs, it is correct, Chair, that the interest expense that we are likely to pay is going to be higher because the rates will go higher. And some entities have said to us, if the IDC is downgraded, we will even put in what they call ratchets. That means that there's just an additional percentage point that they will just add in what they are charging us. Now, the CEO spoke about blending and getting other forms of concessionary funding that we can ensure that we assist those that may need better rates in terms of them being able to afford, because it will not also assist for us to disperse money that will end up in higher impairments. So as we look at the downgrade scenario, Chair, we've played a lot of scenarios and we've looked at how is it likely to impact the entities that we fund and what support are they likely to need. And that's why you will see in one slide we speak about the distressed funding, because we need to identify those that are likely to struggle and devise means of supporting them if they can actually be supported to do better within the downgrade scenario. So it is a balance that we have to continuously monitor with the impact of the higher interest rates that we may be experiencing as the IDC.
Why don't that? You have a transparent method or what I would say or term way of such companies, or because, you know, during 2008, when we looked at all the companies in distress, you could see that some of these were self-inflicted, just to take advantage of the, you know, of the situation that is engulfing the country, not necessarily because they do not have, you know, what it takes to can stand. And there were, IDC responded quickly to such, and there were those that were really, really in need. You could see that even, you know, they were really struggling. They were also struggling to get something from the IDC. So what I want to, something that would be transparent, that will be open to everybody to know that this is the measure that you are using to assist. I mean, to weigh the whether this is self-inflicted or this is the real situation.
Thanks, Chair. Maybe let me add. I think the CFO also needs a water break. So, Chair, we would still do as we did in 20 when we were responding to the 2008 crisis. We'd still do a diagnosis. We call it due diligence to understand what has led to that. Because as you say, if it's self-inflicted and we don't think this is gonna, because there's also that risk. You know, sometimes when times are tough, it's also an opportunity for those that will never have ever gonna make it anyway. They've been masking because they've been just riding the wave. So we'll do a detailed due diligence to understand really what has driven this, so that also we don't have people who just take advantage of this. And at the back of, because that due diligence would also assist us, Chair, to ensure that the intervention that we bring or that we come up with is actually the right one. Because sometimes, because we found sometimes that, particularly in the past, that all they needed was just a break from the banks to say, maybe give me 6 months. That's all they needed. And then the banks were a little bit nervous, and then in that instance, we would come in and just provide a guarantee, and then after that, they would come in. But well, sometimes some of them, the situation has been very dire. So during that due diligence process, we would get that. The trick is for us to do that due diligence as quickly as possible, because you don't want to come up with a perfect diagnosis after the fact when the client has passed on. So it's really trying to balance that. So the DD will do that.
If I can just do, I think there's just one last one or two I didn't touch on, and around the FOS Costco losses in relation to the past. As we were doing the corporate plan for this year, the deep dive were already on the go with the board. So the numbers that went through the deep dive process were also looked at in the context of the long-term turnaround strategies that these subsidiaries are putting together. And when we look at the numbers that we put through for the corporate plan versus what we see coming through as we busy finalizing the audit, it's very within the range that we anticipated in the projection. It's not the exact same numbers, but you see FOS cost staying fairly within and a little bit higher from the score perspective, but it's not doubling the numbers that we would have presented to the committee for the corporate plan. In the actual mode, but we will then bring that picture to the committee when the audited numbers have come out. And the last question, Chair, was around the sale of equity investments. I think you mentioned 2.9. I assume you were relating to the 29 billion total that we are showing as equity investments. That yes, that will. Okay. So, Chair, in the context again of self-funding. The 29 billion is saying if we are to reach the 123 billion target over a five-year period, it will be coming from a combination of borrowing and the equity investments that we would have looked at. And for each one that we end up looking at to dispose, there is quite a detailed process where the board has to see it and say, yes, it is matured, yes, we can exit, and it makes sense. And there's another process that goes to the shareholder before we can exit. But it just also ensures that over the period of the 5 years that we need to disperse at certain levels, the combination of our own funds to the monies we borrowed, we will borrow over the period, is the balance that we are comfortable that it maintains the financial sustainability that we require. So that 29 is made up of various numbers over the period of 5 years, but we'll also go through a very detailed governance process.
Chair, Chair, let me try and answer the others. We'll try and pick a pace because also myself and David will do the others. Chair, there's a question on PEPT, which is, I mean, it's been raised by a number, so I will raise that, and I think I will also tie that with the question on FICA, with the signing of the FICA, what does it mean for us? But before, there's a brief one. On Ogbate, say, where are we with it? So they are still owing us about 75 million. So remember, the loan was 250, so they've been paying. So that is in line. So we're expecting, so there's two payments left of 37.5 each. So one this year, mid-year, and the one early next year. We're not anticipating that they should be able to miss those because they have not missed the others. And the question was, with the nuclear not being, or it just being sent back, the impact, no, because you would recall the mine started mining gold because it found it difficult for technical reasons, so it's not been relying on the nuclear, so on, and that's that. So there's one part which we still have, about 3.6% on the shareholding, so that's the other part. So as far as we are concerned, everything is still on track. In fact, this is also one of the old transactions which we report periodically to the board as well in terms of its performance as part of the governance process. So in terms of, in fact, one aspect which actually has come out on FICA for us, which in fact, at least in our minds, we've been actually way ahead of our peers. When we do a due diligence, we identify who are the people we're partnering with, that's one. So we identify through that engagement, through the due diligence, we want to know what is the source of the funds. So it is important for us to know that. And when then some people come up as politically exposed persons, in fact, our process through the board has been enhanced, that we do an enhanced, what we call it, enhanced due diligence. So we do a little bit more work, why there are PEPs and whatever, so that are there any things that are flagging out that we should be concerned about. So that we do in the normal course. So the signing, in fact, in any event, just the things are possible. But we'd like to believe, we've been doing that already, so we do not see that adversely affecting our processes, if in fact anything just strengthens them. Now, linking that with PEPs, I think Dr. Kado has said, he has kept us very busy in providing the minister with answers. So the approach we've taken is with the shareholder. We've said we're going to be transparent, in fact, with the support of the board. So when people approach the IDC for funding, so from June, because we've done the work, because as you said, so that information will be available for people to get access. So it's not only going to be PEPs, anybody. So if anybody you want to know who is providing finance, you will be able to access that, so that we widen it, not only just to limit it to PEPs. Now, so that we put in an agreement from the 1st of April, as you said. So what we've done is, because we've got this confidentiality clause, so we've gone back to the ones before, and we're engaging with all of those to say, this is what we want to do. So we want to ensure that we do that. And then people must then engage with us and say, why do they don't want us to do that? And then we'll evaluate it. Obviously, if there are no credible reasons, I think we have the ability to negotiate even harder with them. But in terms of the confidential agreement, that's in those clause. But that's the intention. So in fact, the information will be even much wider than just the PEPs. We're not going to narrow it from the PEPs. So that's what we'll be doing as far as the politically exposed people is concerned. If I've missed something, CFO, you will... So if I understood your question, Chair, maybe you can clarify it was saying that information, can we get it from inception? I think it's what I meant.
Not going to be something that's just now. It's been there for quite some time. I think even when you count to 1940, when the ITC, started, I think then you have companies that are still existing currently, that are still benefiting from ITC also, loans and and so forth. So would you be able also to provide us with those, especially those that are still in existence and those that are still having that benefit, intergenerational benefit, so that we can also have a clear picture of who exactly has. Maybe you need to talk to those also, so that we have a clear picture of who exactly benefited from the ITC.
Thanks for the chair. So now, okay, the response I said, the information will be available for everyone who transacts with the ITC, that's number one. So people can access that one. So we will flag in that information who is a PEP and who is not a PEP, but everybody. So we're not going to discriminate because they're PEPs and only give the PEP. So I think all of us who are here are PEPs, so it's actually a bad example. I was trying to look who is not a PEP here, but all of us are. So even you, Mr. Mbatha. So let's say somebody else who's outside who's not a PEP, his information will also be there. That's one part. Now coming to my understanding is we flag who are the PEPs. So we say Dr. Kado is a PEP here. So but now what we'll also do is, my understanding is for the PEP, it's the immediate family and the people you frequent with. So when we say intergenerational chair, that's why I'm pausing a little bit. Yes, because we need to, we'll unpack that to see what that means. Because there's a limit in which you can, how far...
Circle.
Yeah, how far, how big the circle is. Thanks, Mr. Mbatha. There's a limit in terms of how big the circle is. So if it happens that this person is outside of that circle, then that person will not necessarily be flagged. But we've noted the question, because you're right, there are some investments which you've had, which have been in IEC for a while, which in those flagging was who's a PEP, some of those will be highlighted indeed as a PEP, as PEP.
Okay. No, I understand what you are trying to say, but I'm not sure whether you understand what I'm also trying to say. I come to you, I'm a PEP, ne? I benefit. I pay you, finish. But then I die. Not besides my child, benefits from that which I started through you. Nwabisa comes back to you also. Is he not a PEP? He comes to you as a PEP to you, you know? And then Tabitha is a child, it's a cousin to Nwabisa, you see? That's why I'm talking intergenerational kind of a thing, but it's after years. And then the company existed because of you. Otherwise, if it wasn't because of your initial funding, it wouldn't have been there.
No, Chair, that is a difficult one.
I'm deliberately putting it because I want you to tell, because understanding the PEP, that's, and the politics of PEP, that's where it will lead you to. I'm just trying to say, beware that we're also going to be coming for that, because we'd want to understand that kind of information. Because PEPs cannot be just taken for granted now as a now issue. We are saying PEP has a history, and you must note that history. That's what we are trying to say to you. And then we are saying there will come a time that when we will be looking for such information also, so that we can begin to understand that. If you look at the structure of our economy, who really, you know, benefited from that? I'm a politician, I talk politics, and I can't beat about the... I know you are trying to respond it in a technical manner. I'm talking, you know, politics here, and I think the chair might understand what I'm trying to say, and I would really want to challenge you on that. Because that's information that must be available to all of us. Because I remember a few years back, if you remember well, in the last term, Babu Krina, we did come with such requests. And such requests were declined because of certain reasons. And we said it's okay, we put it aside because we thought it had some sensitivity. So I'm worried because now it's coming in a form of PEP. And I think you are correct when you say everybody is a PEP. But then that PEP will have to be looked into. And I'm saying yes, it has to be looked into total. Because that's how we're going to be dealing with that information. It won't be fair to start now and leave the prison. Yeah. That's what I'm trying to say on that particular matter.
Thank you, Chair. Hopefully, the approach that we are taking, which is to be as transparent as possible, as far back as we can, will assist rather than hinder the work of this committee. The board was very, very mindful, Chair, that our job is not to prejudice people in the execution of our work. That's why we took this more transparent approach. And I hope, Chair, it will be supportive to your work.
Thanks, Chair. It's always good to bring your chair. Now I know. Thanks, Chair. So we'll give the information as far as back as we can, Chair. As far as back as we can. And we will be transparent. Chair, so there's a couple of others. I think the issue on tourism, we do, in fact, tourism is one such area. In fact, I think your observation on the fourth industrial revolution, its impact in how we do that, I think it's just so spot on. So we have to look at other sectors where we can really create opportunities. This is why we still we have a unit we call light manufacturing. In there is tourism. So we still focus on tourism. We look at opportunities for tourism. We also now, what we've also tried to do is not to look at just building hotels in Cape Town, Johannesburg, just to go to other areas. But also at the back, of course, we also have a unit we call industrial infrastructure. So what that unit will do is, for example, if now we need a hotel, let's say Bisikisiki, for an example, but we know the road is not right and whatever, so then we can say from the industrial side, can we augment it so that we can ensure that the hotel, so we look at that. So, but the tourism is one area which we will continue to find, particularly when our currency is not strong. The Europeans and the Asians would want to come in. That's one area which we have to So, David, you've got a couple of responses.
Thanks, Chair. One question was around the steel fight. When we looked at how we could make, because the funding is coming in three tranches of 30, 35 million per annum. When we looked at how best to use, because it sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but in terms of manufacturing investments, it's quite small. So we said, how can we make the biggest impact from this fund? And we thought the best way to do that would be an interest rate subsidy. So we're using that funding to provide a lower cost of funds for downstream steel companies. The focus is on downstream. And we'll be prioritizing those that are startups and will have job creation or have exports, etc. We won't fund the upstream steel mills. And the size of the subsidy will be determined by the size of the company. So if you're a small and medium enterprise company, you'll get a higher interest rate subsidy than the larger companies. And we're hoping to leverage this through that mechanism. We're hoping to leverage it at least 10 times. Then on township economies, this is a focus that we do have. As part of Project Evolve, we established a development impact support department, and one of their key focuses is on how to support township economies. Internally, we also look at our strategies. So we identify those strategies where we think there's a benefit that can be obtained for township economies or the adjacent areas. So if I can give you a practical example, we've got a strategy to support mini mills, and the mini mills support township businesses which are involved in building, for example, door frames, window frames, etc., which they can't because they wouldn't be able to get from the larger steel mills. So we see that as also supporting township economy. And then obviously through CIFO, they have a particular focus on the small enterprises, which also looks at township economies. And they also focus as one of their metrics on township, support to township entrepreneurs. There was also a question around the distressed funding. So I think the issue that was raised in the corporate plan is that at the time when we were, and it was around our strategy session last year, we said the year before we had actually identified the amount of funding which was available for distressed clients, both new and old. And if we look at what we've currently funded in 2016-17, we said approximately 58% of that had been utilised. That's not to say that there's a ring-fenced amount which we've set aside for distressed clients. It was just an estimate to say this is what we think the impact will be. It was important for us to, because obviously these are clients which will most likely have a greater risk, and so we had to assess the amount and then assess and see what the impact would be on our business. So it's not to say there's less funding available for distressed clients. In fact, going forward, we see more funding for distressed clients as per the corporate plan. Chair, I also have the provincial breakdown. Obviously, I'm going to, same as the CFO, figures which haven't been audited yet or anything for 2017. But if we look at the, I can maybe just speak to some of it, and we can share the information with the committee. So if we look at the provinces where we traditionally don't have much activity, it's Free State, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and North West. So in Limpopo and Mpumalanga, we're looking at amounts of close to 2 billion for each of them. So 1.9 billion in Limpopo, and Mpumalanga, 2.2 billion. Free State, if you can remember, last year we almost had no activity, mainly due to cancellations. We're looking at an amount of 300 million, and Northwest just over 100 million. Now, obviously, it's something that we are focused on. In particular, our activity within Free State has received a lot of attention. But we do consistently try and see whether additional economic activity can take place in these more rural provinces. So there's also benefit on our development impact scorecard, which also gives them a pricing benefit. So we have improved on some of the provinces. Obviously, Northwest and Free State is still lower than what we'd want. In terms of jobs, I think the question was really around what's the spread of the jobs. So I mean, just to give a sense of the jobs per area. Most of them are in the value chains, so about 100,000 jobs, and then another 50,000 in the other industries. If you link it to what we were saying about the capital allocation, we really do see a lot more jobs being created in agro-processing and agriculture, you know, close to 40,000, which is a big chunk of those jobs, and that's really because of it's much more labour intensive. But we can share the detail with you.
Thanks, David. Maybe just to conclude, I think you made a reference to financial sustainability, that there needs to be a balance, Chair, and we appreciate that. And that's the approach, and in fact, that's the line of march which the board gives us to say, as much as we want you to be financially sustainable, we don't want you then to sacrifice the development. So really, as management, you have to ensure that you balance that. So we shouldn't say no, because we're financial sustainable, we're going to do zero loans, we're going to do this, and we're going to charge so much. So it's really the balancing act for that. And I think also the point that the chair made to say the environment is tricky now with downgrades, because the cost of funding is higher. So what we have to do is to see how best then we leverage with others. So we have to think a bit differently, to say, where are the cheaper sources of fund? How can we blend those? So we have to think differently. That's what we're doing. So we're looking at partnering with other people, putting in our money, blending it with grant funding, still doing more development without sacrificing. So there's an emphasis on that here, but at no point is it to the exclusion of continuing to play our role as a development finance institution. The issue of the provincial spread, Chair, is one which is always on top of our mind. I think Mr. Pickering said one mega project per province. Mr. Pickering, I'm not going to leave here and say definitely I'm going to do that. We're going to try hard. We look at our pipeline. There are some things that we do proactively. There are things that we do in cooperation with entrepreneurs. So it's really for us to drive that. But we've taken the message. In fact, P, will just remind me, we have a session which we call Hands on Deck every second week on Friday. So we're going to look at our pipeline to see how best we strengthen, because you're right. Because once you have a mega project, it helps strengthen things around it. So it might not create jobs itself directly, but those that feed into that. So we've taken that into consciousness. So there was a question on reasons why applications are rejected. Maybe we can share what we can do, because we do analysis of those. And I think what we'll do is, through you, Chair, we'll share it with your office so that we can give the committee members a sense of what we go through, what we encounter. Because we look at different aspects. I mean, we look at the market, we look at, is there a market? In some instances, it's a great idea, but nobody's going to buy the product for whatever reason, so we can highlight. Sometimes it's a great one, but management is very weak, so sometimes you engage with them, but management says, this is my project, I am there, if you know anyone. So that's a bit of a problem, so we have to try and say how we balance it. Well, sometimes the project is just technically flawed. So we look at those, but we would provide, because we've got, I mean, we have something what we call lessons learned as well, where we go through these, we see these lessons, we share them, because we continuously get new people, so we also don't want them to pay the same school fees, so we can share some of the experiences that we see with the committee, for the committee to get a sense. Okay. So there was a reference to say we had a youth conference. I think Mr. Ranto was referring to it with a youth conference in Gauteng. But that does not mean only occasions are in Gauteng. Last year we did road shows almost throughout the whole province. The only province we didn't do a road show was in Gauteng, because we did a road show. So we go through that. And also I'm spending a bit more time. In fact, we spoke about Free State. I spent 2 days in Free State speaking to the stakeholders, businesses, and whatever, to see how we can increase. So we will do that with the other. So we do realize IDC is not a sentient organization. It's a national one, so we are engaging with others. Chair, I think we've tried to address all the questions. If we haven't, it's not intentional. Chair. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Thanks for that. CEO and the chair, the leadership as a whole, as usual, very clear and succinct in terms of the responses, and very clear. You have the issues that come with your hands, and you are very we're not going to have further follow-up because of time challenges. Lunch will be served at Max Building Restaurant downstairs. I think our guests are invited. Okay. Hey, Lana's yourself. So, guests are invited. I'm going to delay you. Okay. Thank you so much. We are coming back. At 2. Yeah. Let's make it 10 past 2 because we made the break. Otherwise, thank you very much. IDC, keep up the good work that you're doing. We really appreciate it. Thank you. All the best for the year. Okay.
Okay, I know. Well, you can drink orange juice or whatever.
I love my coffee.
Plant, but it's not the flavor of the month.
So you see, I don't know.